Welcome, everybody. This is BNP Weekly, episode 105. It is 16th of November, and in the BNP Weekly, we always go through the latest what's happening across the Microsoft 365 platform, and we typically have a visitor like this time as well. Now, starts really well. Yes. Doing this on Monday morning is always so much fun. My name is Esa Juvonen. I'm a program manager from the Microsoft 365 engineering side. And with me as a co-host is Valdek. Who are you?
Hi, everybody. My name is Valdek Mastegas. I am cloud developer advocate with Microsoft for Microsoft 365. And as Vesa said, today we have a guest all the way from South Africa, Alistair Pugin. Welcome.
That's all I have to say, right? Yes. You start with that and we're good. As long as we don't do Baby Shark, I'm happy.
Yes.
Well, no more Baby Shark.
Yeah, I think we're past that time already, so that's all good. Now I need to actually find it quickly. No, it's okay.
It's the number one played track on YouTube ever is Baby Shark.
Yeah, it is. Luckily, it happened. Luckily, our kid was old enough, so he missed it. So
yeah, my kids don't care about it. Yeah,
that's true. Now, Alistair, let's get back to you and the band and concentrate on other things than the Baby Shark. Who are you? What do you do?
Alistair Pugin. I've been working with tech for probably about 20 years. I'm that old. I'm an Office Apps and Services MVP as well as an Azure MVP, and I love everything about community. We've been doing this for 10 years now, and it's great to get people excited about technology.
Cool.
And in your day-to-day job, what are you actually doing?
I work for a company called Tangent Solutions. I look after our cloud services business. So we spend a lot of time doing application modernization, DevOps, cloud app security type things. I spend a lot of my time on the security and compliance side. So that's really the world that I occupy space in. We do have an M365 division that's starting to grow now, but a lot of my time is spent around Zero Trust Security Framework type things, specifically around Compliance Manager, Compliance Center things. When it comes to being able to secure your environment, like the constant headache I have with information boundaries and barriers, not working in Exchange. But that's a separate conversation.
you're basically a business South Africa. Are you doing business in South Africa only, or
We focus core on Middle East and Africa. So we do a lot of work in Nigeria, a lot of work in Kenya. We actually have a team that works with a partner in New York. So I've done a lot of stuff around FINRA and banking. And when it comes to, that's where I know about information barriers, because the banking industry is all about that. So Joanna Klein does a lot around compliance and retention. I'm the guy on the back end that makes sure that you can actually do that when it comes to stuff like CASB and all of those things. And it gets pretty heated when you start talking to customers about locking down content that they don't necessarily want. And then the permutations through conditional access policies and all of those things just go through the roof, you know.
And you've been also really active on the community side of the things, and let's get back on the details in a second, but you've been flying across the world and doing conferences. How's the 2020 feel like?
So strangely enough, that's the complete opposite. The last time I was on a plane out of the country was last year's Ignite. Yeah. And it came up, two weeks ago in my Facebook feed where everyone's saying, oh, we miss you all. And that's the last time I left the country. So it's bizarre. It's probably the longest I've remained in country since 2010.
Yeah.
And it's quite a shift to not jump on a plane. I'm flying now internally, so from Cape Town to Johannesburg and so forth, so on. But not get, the last conference I did was Ignite the Tour Johannesburg, which was the last 2 days of January.
Right.
It was a proper conference, and then everything just went.
Is that a welcome change, or is it like, no, I really love to be again on the road?
I really love to be on the road. As much as we always complain about living out of a suitcase, my thing was about 4 months ago, I started talking to, because the MVP community, especially in the Office Apps and Services space, is so close-knit that they're part of your extended family, right? It's not just people that you know that you want to ask a technical question of. And we started talking, I think it was on a Facebook group recently, about 2-3 months ago, and you actually realize how much impact the Office 365 or the Office Apps and Services community actually has on your life. I mean, right. I jump on a plane anywhere to see 100 of my favorite people. And normally we got the MVP Summit that didn't happen in March, and you get to see these people at other conferences, and obviously the European Collab Summit and all the other BERTs, and then ECS and ESPN and all of, well, ESPC, yeah. Not ESPN. None of that happened, right?
Right.
And you don't, these people are called to, you need to sort of see people, touch the tactile component of having a conversation and watch people get excited, not just behind the lens of a camera, right? I mean, that's great, but there's only so much you can do. We need that human interaction, and talking to a bunch of people in a room, and one light bulb moment where someone sort of nods and says, wow, I finally get what that guy's saying. And that interaction we don't have now, right? I mean, you don't get it on calls. You only get that in one-on-one, sort of 1 to 300 people in a room, and you get that interaction. And yeah, I miss it badly. It became part of what I did, right? As much as spending 28 hours to get anywhere in the world, because I'm in South Africa.
Yeah.
It was painful, but just meeting like-minded individuals and, you know, learning through sharing your passion for technology, you don't get to do that over a call, right?
Yeah.
But there are some positives as well, right? Or is there?
There is. You learn a lot about yourself through this journey. I mean, we'd been in COVID lockdown, I think stage 4, where we couldn't leave our houses. I mean, it was quite a shift.
Yeah.
You reevaluate things. It's one of the reasons why I moved back home to Cape Town, was because I want to be where I'm from, but it's a different lifestyle. My kids want to go home, and we went home, and it's very different. Because quality of life now means so much more, because you're not caught up with all this moving parts, right? So there are positives, but I feel sorry for people that don't have a network that they can reach out to. And everyone's had some sort of burnout of sorts, right? Where it's separation anxiety from your team, not being able to communicate with people more efficiently, getting stuck in front of a desk for 12 hours a day. It's had a huge impact on humanity. And I think on the tail end of this, hopefully we'll get some form of vaccine where people can start, you know, going back to, I don't think there is going back to normal. This is the new normal, right?
How do we
grow this? I mean,
And I think that there's also an interesting point to say, right? Because like you said, the MVP community is very tight, but it's also across the world. So by the time you wake up, maybe that is already evening in Australia and you will not be able to sync with them. Or by the time you're done, America wakes up, right? So it's like you don't get this like serendipitous way to catch up, to have a coffee, to grab, you know, to shoot the breeze and exchange these ideas that might be about work, but also might be about like life or hobbies or like other things. Like I recall still, there was like a few years back, we were at the summit and then we talked about like the backgrounds of everybody, and we learned that we have like in our community there are folks who used to be racing drivers, submarine officers, like people had like, there's so much more to folks than tech only, and you wouldn't learn it otherwise like during a call on a cam, right? So this is exactly like this another dimension that we currently miss. And like, I think that we haven't really found an alternative way to bring it back.
No, we haven't. It's like talking about knowledge management, and there's a nice segue into that. We talk about tacit and codified.
Supernatural.
being able to tap into the expertise of the person, right? Going from tacit to codified to tacit knowledge. And it's, we've been talking about it for 30 years. How do we, simple example, the U.S. Postal Service 15 years ago is worried about losing more than a third of their staff to retirements. And how do we tap into the experiences or the expertise that they have? Because a guy on a bicycle is not going to tell you that there's a dog over there down that street and you need to stay on this side of the road to come around it. And it shortens your journey and it makes it safer. And that's where products like Project Cortex is going around, topic cards, about being able to produce or surface that information that's stored somewhere, not just in the minds of people, but also in all of these content repositories. That's my segue, Dan. We can carry on.
So I'm just going to drop this nugget. I wish we had somebody on a call who had experience with that. Wink, wink.
Now, actually, that's a good segue. I need to say on the MVP and family and everything else and the learnings of 2020, I think one of the things which hopefully will learn everybody from this is more softer skills and soft skills across the world. So it's no longer about traveling and business and being, I'm super successful because I'm flying across the world all the time. No. That's not how success necessarily look like. So success can be something else as well, and the softer skills and family focus more and more. Anyway, coming back on the SharePoint Syntex. So last Tuesday we had Sean Squires doing a monthly community call, a quick demo on the SharePoint Syntex, and you, Alistair, have been involved in the SharePoint Syntex or Cortex story for a while. Syntex is part of the project Cortex, which is slightly confusing, but anyway.
It's like Google and Alphabet, right? It's exactly what Chris did. Well, yeah. Cortex becomes Alphabet, right? and Syntex is Google, right? That's what they did. That's all they did.
Yeah, that's a good way of
well, it's a weird way to explain to Microsoft community the analogy between Google and Alphabet, but I'll take it.
But now Sean Squires is one of the he's a principal PM on that team and one of the persons behind of the automatic artificial intelligence and detection. But what would be your definition on Alistair, on what is SharePoint Syntex and why people should be interested on it? Because I think it's quite difficult. It's quite like, okay, so what is it? Yeah, there's taxonomy thingy and it has this some sort of detection of things, but what is it for me? What's the added value for customers?
So Microsoft started about 3 years ago. Microsoft, Gartner, AIM got together. Well, not Microsoft. AIM and Gartner got together and they put ECM to rest. They said, ECM is dead. Long live content services, right? I call it ECM 2.0. That's my take on it. So ECM 2.0 is really about harnessing knowledge inside of the organization.
Can you clarify what's ECM? Just for the those.
Enterprise content management. So enterprise content management is made up of 8 disciplines. Intelligent capture, scanning a piece of paper. Document management, where that scanned piece of paper goes. Records management, how long you need to keep it for. Web content management, you don't need that information in a document, put it in a page. Enterprise search, how do you find that? And then all the other bits. Digital asset management, business process management, which includes ad hoc routing and workflow, and then electronic forms. Now, Project Cortex brings all of that together, or Syntex, the product of Project Cortex, brings all of that together. So if you look at content processing, that's about mining data stored in content repositories, right? I was thinking about that as we have 100,000 contracts in our organization and we need to update them or we need to know when they expire. There's no metadata associated with it. We just have 100,000 pieces of paper and we need to identify that content process. When it comes to the traditional content, cognitive services side of things, that's a form type processing. So I've got 100,000 invoices and I need to identify it and I need to extract the dates on it and the invoice numbers, boom. Now, for the longest time, we've had organizations out there that did this for you. So you could buy a product that would go and identify, do zonal OCR, form type recognition, all the DSpec or DSclave, DSkew, it'll identify the content and it would extract the indexes or the metadata and stick it into an index and then send it over to SharePoint, right? For the last 20, 30 years, you scan a piece of paper, that's what it does. What Microsoft has done with Project Cortex is to make that easier for organizations to pull in data, unstructured data, identify that, and do something with the information. That's why Microsoft bought FAST, right? Because in the old days, we used FAST for that. So what we did was we said, here's a thesaurus, and bring me a compound term back and do the weighting of that compound term to say, well, bring me the hit risk relevancy for the term triple heart bypass should be a weighting of 70. So I want that to come up before the word triple does and heart and bypass. Now, you've got organizations, and you can speak to Simon Denton from Mott MacDonald, that's got terabytes. They're the only people I know outside of an organization in Hong Kong that uses data trolleys to get their content into SharePoint. So I think they're sitting at 200 terabytes right now. So it's really about tapping into organizations' intellectual knowledge that they have stored in paper. So think about organizations that produce 10, 20, 30 million pieces of paper a day, or even just creating documents, so banks.
Yep.
You know, and being able to analyze that. We looked at what Power BI does for structured data, Cortex does for unstructured data. So data lakes, data bricks, that's structured data, data that's sitting in tables, right? It's not NoSQL where you're taking all the chats that come through WhatsApp and you're mining that data to look for trends and patterns like the FBI does. Those sort of things. And now that capability is available to organizations that want to use Project Cortex. It's got a big data set. And this is an unstructured data set where stuff around BI is around structured data, right? So this is that. It's intelligence built into unstructured data.
That's a really awesome clarification. What is a SharePoint syntax? So really, really good.
So in other words, if you have a heap of unstructured data, it's for you.
That you want to mine, this is for you.
Exactly.
Yeah. To identify content. And think about organizations that have had a file share for 20 years, because that's entirely possible, but even longer. And they just throw content in there, but they have no idea what it is. Pulling that into Cortex, they can mine data more efficiently, understand what they have, and then do stuff. So it's like the AIP scanner does, right? AIP scanner, you point it and it's going to disappear soon. April next year, AIP is gone, right? It's about the security and compliance centers down in M365, and that's Unified Labeling 101. So what the AIP scanner would do, it would take a policy and a label, and it would go look for the conditions equals true, and it'll sniff a file share for you and come back. These are the documents. What do you want to do with it? Yeah. And this is what Cortex does. It will come back and say, hey, we found these documents. Is it of interest to you? That's what the topic cards do, right? And it presents it back to users. Same, but it's artificial intelligence for unstructured data. It's your Power BI for unstructured data. Now you can go and say, bring me back this model.
Yeah, and let's be still super, super specific. We talked about terms like artificial intelligence for the unstructured data. What is the artificial intelligence piece in all of this? I'm just throwing a hard balls.
That's perfect. So how do you build AI? You tell it to go find a salutation on a document, right? So I've got 100,000 contracts, and I know that a salutation as dear Mr., Mrs., or whoever it concerns, generally, for the most part, next to it, it would be the person's name. Yeah? So it would be Dear Alistair Pugin, or to whom it may concern, or whatever the salutation is, right? I can now say whatever word, or I can say, chances are there's an invoice number next to the word invoice or INV or whatever you want to do around that. I want the invoice number, or go find me the latest date on the document. Yep. Or if you find someone's name, then that, and you're doing it specific with GDPR, if I have someone's name in a document, that's personally identifiable information. According to the GDPR, I need to store that separately, right? Those are the things that you can do when it comes to entity modeling. I can say, go find this a concept of salutation or an actual term, invoice, and everything next to invoice would be an invoice number, and bring that back and write it to a list. So that's the AI, because I can't tell it where on the document the word invoice is. It's going to OCR that document, extract the text like you do in an index for search, and then go look next to the word. And that's the AI. I'm not giving it a bunch of samples. I'm saying, char through 100,000 documents and go find somewhere on the document. There might be a Mr., Mrs., whatever, right? Yeah. And next to it, extract the name. And that's where the artificial intelligence comes in. Or, well, you've got the machine learning and you're telling it based on that could do this. And then it might come back with suggestions. Hey, what do you think about this? This is where the AI is.
Yeah. So will that then completely replace the metadata finally? So we can finally stare aside and stop asking end users to fill in the metadata for documents. That's a question.
That's utopia, right? That's holy grail stuff, right?
Yes.
You'll fix everyone's problems if you can actually do proper. Look, you still have to work with the model, right? Because the model goes and it says, well, I go to Azure and then I come back and I give you a result. Now, from a security perspective, that's another conversation we're having right now. But yes, if you can write metadata correctly, because that's the biggest problem, using Cortex, you'll solve everyone's lives. Because nobody, in the old days, we used to create content types, right? And say, well, you've got 47 document types, and each document type will need a content type. And then you spend 2 weeks sitting in a room full of people, including a librarian that understands Dublin Core, and you debate the usage of the word author. Right. PCMI was a thing back then, man.
Yeah, Dublin Core, absolutely. It goes way back.
Yeah. So and then 6 months later, after creating these 47 content types, we end up with two. One called long content type, one called short content type, because nobody could be bothered with filling in different content types.
Correct.
Yeah, but it is exactly that. Like, if you, like, nobody else than people in library live with Conda. Like, people have their work to do, right? And the last thing they care about is filling in 20 million things about a dog they created.
Yeah.
They just want to get on with their lives and their work and not spend days feeling like, okay, so I have a dog. I've done all this work. Now let me sit here for a day and classify it properly. Like, no, that's not reality.
Look, in the old days, we had QuickBots, right? It could take data out of a document. I mean, I used to use it to match the version numbers, right? For a SharePoint version number into a document. That was just like a party trick, right? Walk in and you solve everyone's problems with one thing, quick part version number. You never have to put a version number into a document.
Then you had a file that was an office, like a CAD drawing or something else that didn't have quick parts. And that one. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, then you screwed. But that's the thing, right? It's about being able to intelligently create metadata. And it's been that utopia, that world that we've all searched for, especially in organizations that have 100,000 contracts that need to be updated. I was on a call today with a customer that says, well, we need to change this thing in Europe somewhere where we need to update the interest rate on our contracts. And we've got 100,000 contracts. So, how do we go about doing that, you know?
So let me ask you this. So is it only for files that originate from a paper that are scanned? Or imagine that I create a Word doc, but I didn't do anything else than just include the contents in the doc, and I have that sitting somewhere, let's say, in library. And now I want to know, like, if this is a project plan, what is the project state on that file so that I can find all plans for all projects that are in progress, for example?
Look, it's not that type of AI, right? It's not that good. It's just you got to tell it what to look for, and then it will go look for you.
Yeah.
It's not going to come up. It's not self-healing, self-learning, sort of Skynet type Terminator AI. It's not that good.
But I mean, if you can teach that thing of notion of a project and where to look up its state, then it could it link the project state to a file that belongs to project?
Yeah. So what you would do is you build that entity model and say, go find me all documents that has the word project or project plan, and then go look inside of it. And if you find a rag status, or if it's a status, tell me what the status is, and then also bring me back the date. And then you write that to a list, and then you can BI on top of that and say, well, I want to know if this project is late, if there are words like blocker or delayed. Bring me that from an entity modeling perspective and then report on it. So yes, you could automate. That's actually that's a great idea. So think about it right now. If you look at what Teams has finally got proper integration into project, right? They threw it out and the world went, oh, what's going on? And then they went, okay, they brought it back, right? So now they've got planner, project integration, and then there's, what's the other one?
Roadmaps
on the Gantt chart. And for my project team, because we live in Azure boards, right, and bringing boards into Teams, and now I've got this plan, it's project plan, I've got a project manager, you can do that now and I can get what I want. I'm super excited about it. But it's the same thing, right, being able to, this is a segue to move away from a really boring topic into Teams, right?
So exciting.
but the advancements in where Teams is going, and Teams being the new front door, right, not to be confused with Azure front door, because that's
the other
front door. but I think that's also another paradigm shift for us, is that If you don't know what SharePoint is, chances are you've worked with SharePoint before and you'll never have to know about it, because we're building intelligence that's ubiquitous into the back of Teams. And I'm excited about that. And I'm this old, right? Exchange 5.5 had a product called Digital Dashboards.
Yep.
Right?
Microsoft, I remember that.
That is what Teams is today, right? Without the chat. It's exactly that. I'm so excited because I deployed Digital Dashboards back then. Yeah.
Oh, by the way, still, for those who do not remember that, if you open up your Outlook and you click your mail account name, your mail name, in the top, the first node in the thing, you will actually see the Digital Dashboard. It will show you the tasks and everything.
Yeah.
It's still there. It's just mind-blowing.
The experience in Outlook, yeah.
We that old. That's scary.
Yeah.
You're like one of two people maybe on the planet that I've spoken to about a digital dashboard, because I remember that, and it's,
But I mean, so that was, wasn't that like the first experience that you would get when you would open Outlook Express?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the first, the welcome page, today page, or whatever it was called?
And it's mind-blowing that it's still there, and you can still find it in a normal Outlook 20, whatever Outlook from Office 365. Click your name, it's still there. So I can't show it from my, because there's confidential information there, but tasks and everything else, but still, it's mind-blowing. So But it is, like you said, moving on to the Teams topic, and for sure, Teams is surfaced as the centralized access point to everything. And then obviously it has its own chatting and videos and all of this stuff, what we're doing here as well. How do you see the adoption of Teams in South Africa or in your markets, which is not just about South Africa? Are people accepting the model? Are they using still SharePoint on the side? Are they surfacing SharePoint as an example inside of it, the corporate communicational part of the things?
So the glue, Teams has always been seen as separate, right? You are now surfacing SharePoint as a first-class citizen, right? The same as we did with Yammer. It's an in the rail or whatever that you call the app bar, because they keep changing the names. Yeah. And you can ask Matt Wade for an actual description of what it is, because he's got pictures. I see that we talked about earlier on today about the intelligent, or we've always talked about the intelligent intranet, right? And now we can supersize it with Cortex, because we can build more knowledge. But I think that we are going to see a merging of what you did from a collaboration side into how do you push content or update or inform employees inside of your organization, because SharePoint, there's better glue. The glue is tighter. The user experience is richer. Look, Teams is not exactly, the user experience is, let's just leave it there.
careful. This is a family show. So,
The user experience is fit for purpose, right? And structurally, it works. I mean, it's going to take some time, because it's Electron, to change all of that. Customers want to style and skin and make it look like the organization. But functionally, Teams is great. And it's a step up from, I suppose it's, you can't compare SharePoint and Teams. As much as there's information being shared between people, it's a very different user experience. And I think the richness from SharePoint is just going to make Teams so much better, and it's going to make people want to spend more time there, because I can surf a single point of entry, right? SharePoint has come a long way. I think the modern experience has really done well for bringing SharePoint to the fore. It's so easy. The fact that we've got all these templates, you can start building intranets on the fly. You can empower organizations to do it much easier. You don't need a 3-month project to do these things, right? Yeah. And that's great. And now, first-class citizen, surface it immediately in Teams, and bringing in the glue between what information architecture you use for Teams versus what you use for an intranet, that we're starting to see sort of merge across the two, because you can't look at Teams in isolation. It's not like you're working on a project, this is a working documents folder, and then you're going to throw it over the other end to SharePoint, because it is SharePoint, right? And they don't understand, well, who was I speaking to? I've got a friend of mine that builds chandeliers for yachts, right? And they've got a ton of contractors, and the only way we can manage permissions effectively inside a SharePoint, and I can't believe I'm saying this, I actually like private channels by design, because in this use case, it actually works, right? Because a private channel is a separate site.
Yep.
Great. And now I can actually do better permission modeling for contractors, right, around building these great chandeliers for yachts. But We're seeing teams grow up, and it's no longer the unruly teenager. We've seen teams sprawl like we saw SharePoint sprawl when everyone got an Oprah SharePoint site, right? And we started to see teams governance come into play, and people are actually accepting it because they're utilizing the tooling. Yeah. And that's the great part. We're seeing it surpass the Microsoft competitors around functionality. And it's not, and I'm not talking about Slack. I actually like Slack, the other competitors out there. And it's great to see the integration between competitors. So when we start looking at CVI, it's great that you know that you can have a cool Teams room system, and the fact that we're getting these devices, I'm excited about it because you can connect more of your world to Teams, and it's very not Skynet. but you can, and at the rate of change that we're seeing updates come through, it's refreshing to know that there are certain things that are staying the same. Yeah. And people are getting used to working with Teams. A lot of questions through user voice, but functionally it's working much better than any other product in the stack has, because we're giving that people together mode, device management, better device management, companion mode, a lot of things just to help people work in their daily lives, outside of how many teams do you have and how many private or public channels do you have. Just being able to connect humans, I think, is the big thing for me.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, like I said, the all of the products are being more and more merged inside of the Teams. So Power Platform absolutely is natively inside of the Teams. So SharePoint is natively there with Microsoft Lists, and then OneDrive and the upcoming portal applications and everything else. And also then the development experience is pretty decent and getting optimized all the time. So it's good to see that the ecosystem and customers are accepting this new world of working as well. So if we think about super classic way of doing collaboration, we used to do that in SharePoint, the number one problem was that every single SharePoint site was an individual island. So they were basically a URLs, but you didn't have that global navigation. And that was the thing what everybody implemented back in like 5 or 10 years ago. Everybody just implemented the global navigation. So you
a mega menu.
Exactly.
Yes. So still there.
Now we have
still
the mega menu, which is basically the Teams. Oh. So, yeah. So which is kind of cool. So the scenarios don't actually change. The way we surface them changes, hopefully, in a better way. So.
Well, because at the end of the day, like you can imagine that people still have the same needs, right? They still want to be able to go around from one thing to another, keeping the context of their work and not being lost. Like, they want to be able to, like, if they go to a place, they want to be able to go back and not just, okay, so now I'm here. How do I go back to the thing other than use bookmarks or type a URL? Because, like, that is not a great experience. Yeah.
Look, in 30 years' time, when the kids of today actually come into the workforce, they don't understand navigation. They look for things, right? They search. It's all they do. That's what they do. Today, you still have people that, and whenever we do migrations, we always say to the customer, it's great that you want to use Teams. All your users live inside of Outlook because they've got their own folder structure, or they live in Windows Explorer. So all we're going to do is give them the same experience in Windows Explorer. So your change in user adoption is not crazy, right? I have a page and there's a new app called Teams. We give them the same experience and we gently sort of usher them into, hey, you're working with a document, you no longer have to mail them. You can real-time co-auth with a document that's now sitting inside of Windows Explorer, where it always was. And then, hey, you don't have to email to communicate about that. There's Teams. Now you can talk about things. So talk like we do in Skype. And then we show them how to do real-time document management inside of Teams, inside of a channel, right? And then a files tab and all of that. But it's really about minimizing the disruption of service to users. If you think about a bank, right? Let's take a bank in New York. They've got 62,000 users across the globe. How do you roll out Teams? You don't. If you are going to want, you literally don't, because it's an impossibility. It's a staggered approach. You disable Teams and you replace Skype for Business. So you hide the Teams icon, you just give them chat, boom. Or you start with a carrot and you say, well, hey, you're collaborating on this document. Do you know that you can chat with a person about that? You don't have to send an email. Oh, wow. And now they've got a reason to move to Teams. And that my 84-year-old mother stalks me on Facebook. 25 years ago, she wouldn't go into my room because she's afraid that the computer's going to explode. But because there was a need to follow me and find out what I'm doing every day, she's got a touchscreen phone and she stalks my Facebook. And that's really what it's about. If you give someone a need, it's not about the education. Yep. They will find a way to use it.
Yep.
So stop trying to tell people to use Teams. Give them a reason to use Teams and your user adoption's magic.
Yes.
Absolutely.
It's always about the why. It's always about the why, never about the how and the what.
Or forcing does not work. Quite serious, and it doesn't work. Forcing somebody to away from Slack to a Teams just by doing things, people will find a way.
Well, I mean, the forcing thing, I can imagine that comes back to, like, typically when in companies you have a plan, like it is a project that is due by a certain date, and by then, like, you have to have a plan. By then, everybody moves, and that is why it's where it's coming from, like the notion that by X date, everybody has to be over. And that's not the reality, because, like, it's not how people work, right? Like, they will move, or they will truly move when they're up for it, when it clicked for them, the benefit to move to this other place, as opposed to use what they already know.
Sure. Look, you should take that into account in that they're setting the date. So, see?
Yeah. You know, a lot of people, and I remember speaking to my good friend Warren Marks at AvePoint, and we always used to say that hybrid is a journey, right? Because you want to move from on-prem to the cloud. And Warren actually said to me a good couple of years ago, and I coined the phrase from him, it's like, hybrid is an end state. You know, it's an end state. That you can live in hybrid, right? You've got content, perfect example, right? Coming back to Cortex. You've got content that needs to stay inside of a legacy ECM system because of regulatory compliance, right? DoD this and all of those things. Now, naturally, that hybrid is an end state because you will always have an archive sitting there for legal reasons. You have to keep it there because there's this tick box around a DoD certification that Microsoft doesn't have. And it's not Microsoft's problem, DoD's dead. But there are still organizations that subscribe to it, right? With Cortex and a connector, you can leave it there and surface it there. So you can still use the engine behind Cortex to bring that data in, but leave it there. And then hybrid's still an end state. Even if you move that virtual machine on-prem and you throw it into Azure and it's on the cheapest storage, but you have to keep it there for 30 years, it's still hybrid, right? It's still hybrid.
Yeah.
And it's an end state. And a lot of customers out there they fail to realize that you can, there's a coexistence, right? You don't have to just throw everything away for the sake of wanting this new shiny thing. And a lot of that can still be done, you know? There was no point to that. I just went to the
Cool. Let's actually do some articles and let's get back on the discussion. So just making sure that we don't go over the 1 hour limit.
We will.
Because apparently that's what people have time for lunch, and they want to have a look on and listen to things while they're on lunch. Anyway, so a few articles. Let's talk about this as needed. There's quite a few, actually, articles. So we will not talk about all of them in detail. But last week, we announced from Microsoft's side a new redesigned Microsoft Craft Changelog. And this is actually pretty cool. Briefly going to show that so you can more easily and efficiently have a look on the latest announcement and changes on a specific services or specific areas. And you can actually filter down on things. So that's actually really cool. So you understand the latest version and what's being released on which time frame. So really cool stuff. The other thing, super important thing actually, announcement general availability of Microsoft Teams resource specific consent and rechannel messages. Waldeck, I'm throwing this to you. Why is it so super important?
Well, I mean, in a past, oftentimes we would need the group read write all permission, which is like master access
to everything.
Yep. Right. And it's like either all or nothing. With that, you can have access to a specific thing. What's more, you can have your app access only one particular team channel or something and not even like read access to all teams. No, you can have your app access one specific object on which it operates, which is really great from the access point of view. What is interesting, though, is how will you be able to track which application has access to what? India.
True. Yeah, that's the secondary then challenge after this. But this is already a really, really good movement for Microsoft Teams. And we'll come back on there is a request from one person a little in later, but let's go through to other articles as well. Now, this one, I wrote a lengthy monthly summary related on Microsoft 365 PMP. So basically walking through again what has happened within the last month. And this is really time consuming things because there's so many things happening in Microsoft Graph Toolkit or Community Docs and so on. But what we're going to basically do with this one is have one list of things which lists all of the changes in samples, in the team samples, or who are the contributors who contributed within the last month. So super,
it's
super
lengthy. It's a lot, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a lot. But it's great to see that there's a lot of people who are actively involved in the community events, which we run in Microsoft together with MVPs as well. There's quite a lot of different communities which are being executed. Now, this one was from the Power Automate side. So Power Automate Desktop, November 2020 update. And basically, you can actually have a system icons and tray icons when somebody's being executing or somebody's being failed and get notification. To be honest, personally, I feel that these are super annoying. I just can't stand the incoming email messages and all of that stuff. But
maybe some things are urgent and important enough for you to be able to tell when things broke because you rely on them. So
Absolutely. It's not the fact that I don't like it doesn't mean that somebody else doesn't like it.
Yes.
But good summary on the updates on that side. So what's actually happening and what are the latest. Now, this one is from Paolo and he is smiling. So classic joke because we're always giving him a hard time of it. That's him not smiling. But around the resource specific consent in Microsoft Teams with Microsoft Graph. And there's a good point and ask. Hopefully, please, something like that will come to other workloads as well. And we are actively actually working on a SharePoint Online to have the resource specific consent support.
But in a way, it's been there in SharePoint for a long time, right? Because in the past, you could build an add-in and give it access to one particular site, right?
Yes.
So now it's just a matter of transferring that concept to Graph, which isn't trivial, but the concept is exactly like, allow us to do what we've been able to do already in the past.
Yep, absolutely. Now, moving on to articles, you had a nice article, Waldeck, connect your React app to Microsoft 365.
Correct.
Toolkit.
Correct. So the other day we launched, and we, that means the Microsoft Graph Toolkit and myself and my job at Microsoft, we launched a new quick start walking you through how would you use the Microsoft Graph Toolkit with React apps. Which is a really great thing. So we take you all the way down from all you know is React. So how you would create a new app and then build it out to use MGT.
What is an MGT?
Microsoft Graph Toolkit.
Just making sure that people understand what you're saying.
Yes. Very good. Very good.
We Microsoft people tend to use this approach.
I thought it was a car, right? It was a car.
MG.
Yeah, MGT, right? What is that? Top down.
It's a different car than the MGS, right? No affiliation with any car manufacturer.
So moving on to the articles, connecting SharePoint Online CSAM using non-interactive headless application through user delegation. So using CSAM and then accessing information from the code. So really cool blog post walking through the process and how does it work and the permissions and all of that stuff in the Azure side. So people can easily make that things happen. This one is really cool for Marcus Müller, a simple SPFX file upload for track and drop, including PDF conversion. So basically track and drop files to a Microsoft Teams tab or a SharePoint page built with SPFX and then transform that to be a PDF file. So really cool as well. So simple automation.
I think the previous one is quite invaluable for, we've got a lot of customers asking about drag and drop and specifically PDF conversion. But I think that is magic. You should actually charge for that.
So that is actually powered by Graph, isn't it?
It is powered by Graph.
Yeah,
yes.
Exactly. So there is nothing for him to charge for, really.
Yeah. But it's building on top of the Graph as well. So somebody needs to actually provide that experience, and then we basically convert that to PDF. So So classic request from the customers for sure. And to be fair, the sample is available in GitHub as an open source and people can learn about it. And then you can pull it down, you can repackage that, make it more polished, support and publish that to your customer and then support that. That's how people make money. So There is now an API to add or update custom branding to Azure Active Directory sign-in pages. Not necessarily something what you change too often, but hey, it's cool that there's an API through Graph, right, to make that happen. Good blog post from Tom walking through the supported capabilities and what is the different properties for it. To be fair, like I said, I don't think people change this too often, but hey.
This is not really about the change being too often, but more about the case where you don't go to prod and click around to do things. Like you have to have script, you have to have a repeatable way of doing things.
Absolutely.
So towards that end, I think this is invaluable.
Yep, absolutely. This one is from Paul calling Microsoft Graph with BMP PowerShell. So BMP PowerShell is used by tens of thousands of tenants every single month. And this actually works through the way how the BMP PowerShell automates creation of an application behind of the scenes and then makes it super, super easy to actually use Graph to hit the certain endpoints and all of that. So really cool stuff as well, walking through the implementation. So Erwin Van Hoonen actually implemented this initialized BMP PowerShell authentication, which can be used for automating basically the creation of the Azure AD application for 2 years. And that's pretty magical. So you don't have to go to the Azure AD UX and click through and do the things and do the consents and all of that stuff. You just run one PowerShell command with sufficient permission, you're good to go. So really, 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 really.
In a way, it is an interesting thing, right? Because to connect to AAD, you have to have an app, but this creates an app. So what are you connecting with?
All right.
Right? Yes.
That is true. Now, this one is a good summary on from Stefan related multilingual support on SharePoint Online. So really walking through what they said, how does it actually work? How does it actually is it being implemented? So that people understand the different experiences on there. So really cool stuff as well. Now, to be fair, those who know this area, there are things which we should improve there. It's not like a super clear how the multilingual experience works in SharePoint, because there's multiple aspects on that discussion as well. Now, this one is from Matt Waite. What we do actually in Microsoft as well. So a lot of our teams, we use emojis, and that's actually a really nice way of decorating the team channels.
Just be careful. There was one stage that I remember Gokhan and I had a conversation about it. When was it? There are some emojis that break things. I don't have a list of the emojis that don't work. And then you must remember the emoji gets translated into the file name of the channel. So just be wary about how that looks on the SharePoint side. So like $, money, the word money, you'll be surprised
how it looks.
They fixed it. Is that
so? In other words, like you would first create the team with regular name so that it doesn't have emoji and then rename it to have it, because then the site is already there, right? Or folder or whatever.
Yeah, there's a permutation that breaks it. So just be wary when you start using emojis.
Yes. So basically, and Matt is walking through it with a video on how you should be doing this and how it can actually break things as well.
Yeah.
Perfect.
This one is from Jonas A. Klein, starting retention based on a date column on a SharePoint Online. Why is retention important? Alistair, explain.
Well, retention and disposition, right? Two things. It's not disposal. So retention is really about storing content. How long you should keep a document, that's the life cycle of the document, and what you need to do based on when it matures. So an invoice needs to be kept for 5 years and then you need to get rid of it. Or a contract renewal, where you have a rental agreement or a contract that says, this person is renting this office space for 3 years. In month 33, I would want to know that this contract is expiring and I either need to renew it or I need to get a new tenant, right? Yeah. And in this case, it's based on events, since he's talking about event-based retention and how to auto-apply based on a date. So in this case, I would say, well, I've got a contract and it's 3 years minus three months, do something with it. However, that's 33. At month 33 from created by, notify someone that you need to kick off a workflow to say, hey, this contract is up for renewal. You need to reach out to whoever the person is that has that contract, the tenant, and you need to find out if they want to renew the lease or you're going to go find a new tenant. And that's what's happening here.
Okay. So something classical, I can imagine that, Waldeck, you did this as well. When we were creating corporate communication like intranets back in time for SharePoint, which were basically classic publishing, at least in certain large cases, we did this automatic retention, let's say, modified the dashboards, where basically the content editors always knew that these are the pages which haven't been reviewed for a past year. And yeah. So then you get a notification basically on, can you go and double check that this page is still up to date?
Yep.
And then you basically do that. And using all of these new capabilities which are available might be actually much more easier, because at the time it required significant custom development to make all of that happen. So
yeah, you would have a timer job that would go through all pages, give me files selected from. Yes, that's how it
exactly.
Good timer job. Wow.
Yeah.
Cool. Then we have a few recording documents. Actually, can you, Alistair, quickly explain what's the objective of the recording 365? You're part of this as well.
Yeah. So regarding
365. I think you're yelling over there. So that's,
I have no idea what that was.
Oh my God, the jerky picture.
So regarding 365 is a bunch of like-minded individuals that like to share information about Microsoft 365. What's an opinion? What we think works, what doesn't work when you have a call. When we do something cool and we think it's a cool idea, we knock it onto regarding 365's media publication. We've got, I think, about 16 or 17 authors that create content for it, Joanne being one of them. We've got Sarah Hassey. Liz is no longer there because she works for Microsoft, but Louise Fresh, Daryl Webster, Lauren Strand, and there's a ton of people. Our social media manager, if you need anything from us, reach out to Philip Worrell, Phil Worrell, and he'll be able to tell you a bit more. But it's really just a place to find information about M365. And we get about 60,000 hits a month. So there's quite a bit of readership there. Between 50 and 60, we peaked at about 180,000 at the height of COVID. And then it came back to about between 60 and 80,000.
How do I start with Teams?
Yes.
Private channels and Teams. Yeah. There background blend Teams.
Know your audience.
Yeah.
Exactly.
There's a YouTube channel that goes into the backup regarding 365, so there's quite a few videos there. If you're interested in writing for regarding 365, reach out to Phil. I'll happily chat to you.
Cool. Excellent. Now, Sarah had last week an article here, which is Microsoft Search Deep Dive, so walking through what it is and having a discussion with Bill. Bill is wearing his... Okay. it is getting winter times in Seattle, so you know. That's good. Bill is the program marketing manager for Microsoft Search. So that's why he's one explaining things. He's been around for a long time as well.
Yeah.
We were actually in the Microsoft Certified Master for SharePoint Rotation 1 together with Bill Baer, 3 weeks in a room. So that was pretty awesome. Ed mentions lower stress, and this was something which we actually talked about before we started recording. So Daryl has a note here which says the Ed mention helps teammates keep on top of the conversations in Teams. Obviously, this is slightly debatable, because like in my case, I'm just fed up on every single time I open in Teams, there's like tin 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 mentioned. So, and do not mention channels. Mentioning channels is wrong, because then everybody gets the notifications. Yeah.
I mean, it has its use case, right? Like everything in life, it has its place.
Sure.
Just don't do it every time.
Yeah. No, that's true. That's true. But good article on that one. Debatable, obviously. Is it actually really lowering stress or not? Because, hey. And then Juan Carlos Gonzalez had a new Microsoft Teams meeting setting only the organizers can bypass lobby. We are adding additional settings on the meeting options all the time. Actually, our internal options are even more complicated than this. So it's pretty cool. So Mikael had a good proposed related mapping of clearing crawled property to managed property mapping using PowerShell or code. So really explaining how to make things happen. He's from a Microsoft Search XMVP, and there was a long Twitter discussion related on this one, and I think that's why he wrote this down. Laura Rogers had a required SharePoint document metadata flow trigger. So basically, ask additional metadata, if I'm not reading this in the wrong way, correct, if it's actually missing based on the item which is added on the list, which is really cool, actually. Yeah. This is a that good is, idea.
Because a lot of times you can upload a document and not put the metadata in. So it checks in the document, it checks it out back to you, and it's not published. Yeah. And for people that hate filling in metadata, this is an easy way to nag them to actually roll. There's an email. Yes. Please fill in the metadata because nobody can see your documents. That's great.
Exactly. Yeah. And we will keep on sending this notification for you until you will comply.
Until you fill it in.
And then you'll create a rule which removes this email every day in your electronic
software. Yeah. Now, Joel Rodriguez, this is a 2 weeks old, but we missed it. There's a nice series related on SharePoint spaces. So walking through the different spaces, structures, and options. I think there is actually this. There was a few cases in the blogosphere related on building, let's say, learning stuff with SharePoint spaces. I think there's definitely a use case for it. Have you seen, Alistair, use cases on SharePoint spaces?
It's actually quite an interesting question. When we start looking at engineering drawings or engineering design, specifically 3D design, clear use cases. There's definitely a use case. So, in the automotive industry, the trick is to find people that are interested in VR, right? So, working with an engineering diagram of a piston inside of a motor vehicle, I see huge value there. But then you still need to capture the information that way, and that's the tricky part. So, when you're looking at working in a petrochemical, right, you could actually go in and if you took an Insta360, the new ones or even the old ones, and you shoot a video of doing an inspection of a tank and looking for hairline fractures on the tank, because that's what happens when you start looking at doing a turnaround in oil and gas on a station, and they're doing it currently. Being able to rotate that and have the conversation around that makes a lot of sense. But then it's the added equipment. I need VR or I don't need VR. And how do you produce and how do you consume? If you can bring that together, the marrying of the two worlds, then it becomes awesome. Yeah. Outside of that, the use cases are far and few between for me.
Yeah. And right now it's more of like a showcasing. Oh, it's a cool site and you're going to go there and do things. But then I know that there's some marketing customer cases coming related on SharePoint spaces, which is really interesting, which I can't talk about at this point. We need to actually follow up on that. So whenever they're out, we'll actually share them as well. Now, Chris O'Brien shared something this morning, automating location check-ins in Power Automate, which is pretty cool. He's been working on a Power Automate area recently. So walking through that scenario and explaining status and location updates on the thing. So having a really easy way of then adding check-ins on what's happening and whatever the location is, well, whatever the people are doing with the application. Anyway, and then two more or one more.
Awesome feature.
Yes. So Sebastian Levert announced last week that he's moving into Microsoft, and that is a great picture. So
is that Photoshop though?
I don't think
it is. His head doesn't look. It looks
No. It's a real picture. He does. You can.
That's
he can
bizarre,
move his neck vertebrae.
The weird shadows. Look at the shadow of the lamp and the shadow of the chair, and there's no shadow on him, and his head is sideways. It's like a hillbilly.
A real picture because he has a overhead lamp, and I think he also has. Just like key light or something. Like
concentrating on the essentials, absolutely.
Yes.
So, but Sebastian is moving to Microsoft Craft Team. He's a well-known MVP. He was the product manager in the Valo. And moving into the Craft Team right now. So pretty soon, actually.
November 28, I believe.
Yeah. And then the last thing, which was something which was actually, there was a lot of discussion in Facebook related on this one as well, and Mark Rackley put it in Twitter as well, and there was reactions on it. Stop recording sessions for free virtual events. And this is his opinion related on, should we be doing recording sessions or not on the virtual events? Now I'm trying to get back to your side. Is this a good idea or not?
What is there?
Live sessions or recordings or?
It's difficult to have an opinion about this. The fact that stop recording sessions for free. Well, right now, it's like saying, if I'm a DJ and I want to play music, but I can't play it at a nightclub anymore because the nightclubs are not open, what do I do? You know, so what if someone records it? If I sit here with the phone and I record it, it's not like you're handing out. Then don't be a speaker. If you're paid for speaker, don't speak at free events. Simple. My opinion's different, right? So don't do that. It's difficult. People get upset. People have their own opinion. If you are speaking at a free conference, then understand what it means by free.
Yeah.
And stop being afraid of sharing your information because someone's going to copy it. So what?
I think this comes more from the let's say how we used to do things in the past, where you would build
a
session
sharing.
Yeah, exactly.
That's one stone. Yeah.
Right, and then like you would go to different events across the world, maybe, or a country, and deliver that in person. Whereas now, if you do it once and share it, well, then everybody will watch the video, and there is no reason for you to redo it again because it's been shared already. Right. And that made me say, like, okay, so if I want to do multiple events, I either will re-deliver what's been already shared and there is no point in that, or I need to come up with something new every single time, which is too much effort because like we just don't have time for that.
So,
right?
So as an example for Microsoft, we've been just notified and, hey, by the way, your recording, which you did on the summer related on this and this will be used in here. And so you're like, okay, well, fine. And then we join in for the live Q&A, but it's more a notification. And one of the reason why our management chain made this decision is that they want to reduce the stress so that everybody needs to do all the time re-recordings and new videos and deliveries and all of that stuff. That is actually stressful as well.
But I think what is the end goal? Like, why do you speak? Because you want to share your knowledge and expertise with your audience. So if that is the end goal, what does it matter if you do it in person here or here and there? Like, why not record it once, publish it on your channel so that your person, like you build your own audience, have it shared whenever, and then maybe think of something else. Maybe the unique thing is like office hours. Maybe every other week you will have like half an hour live stream. So if all people want to do is to watch your recording, they can do it whenever they are. And with that, because it is available for free for everybody, it's linked to your persona, right? So you get all credit because obviously you've done all the work. But then if you have additional audience who has a need to connect to you, to ask you things, to like pick your brain, well, that is the value add, why they come to you at given time. And that is a unique thing that they will do whenever you have office hours on your term, as opposed to a recorded office hours and they can see somebody else ask a question, right? So perhaps that is more the format to which we need to look, as opposed to, no, let's use the approach from the past where we will re-deliver live the videos that we used to do, the same session, but it's exclusive to this one time. And if you are not there, you're missing out.
Alistair had to move because of the meeting room booking. So
yeah.
Well, they kicked me out of the meeting room, right? So I had to move to my desk.
No, it's okay. Okay. But yeah, I think the whole 2020 has been quite a different, and I think everybody is still learning the right ways of doing these conferences remotely, and that's part of this discussion. So and Mark's opinion is completely valid as well.
Absolutely.
There's multiple opinions. So
yeah.
Well, look, if you're doing a free event, then it's free, right? If someone's paying you for it, then it's the same thing. You shouldn't have to worry about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, gentlemen, I've got to go.
Absolutely. We're hitting the one-hour recording marker as well. So thank you, Alistair, for this one. We went way too long.
No problem. It's
easily can happen when there's a good discussion. But thanks, everybody, for watching and joining and or listening, depending on which format you're using. And we'll be back in a week. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Alistair. Bye.